We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Welcome to ASMR with Liz. Welcome to the Holy Hour. I am Liz Ball, and I'm going to be hosting by myself today, and it's because Amelia is visiting with her freshly vaccinated parents in Florida, so don't worry, we're not breaking up. I think that would be the most devastating breakup of my life if we ever did. Oh God, why did I say that? Knock on wood. So I will be hosting alone slash with my cat Grandpa. He's sitting right next to me licking his belly, quiet for the first time in his entire cat life. I think I'm so nervous to host by myself because it's my personal nightmare is just like other people hearing my incessant inner monologue. And that's pretty much what this is gonna be. So I hope that you enjoy it and our inner monologues can relate to each other. So before I get started with anything, I just wouldn't feel comfortable if I don't just start by saying like what is on my heart and on my mind while I record today. And I'm sure a lot of you might be in the same headspace as me. Today, I'm recording on the 17th. There was a racially motivated hate crime that happened in Atlanta, Georgia. And this white guy killed 8 people in a few different spas because he saw them as areas of temptation because he blames Asian women for his sex and porn addiction. For those of you who have been listeners since the beginning, or even brand new listeners, I'm sure you know that both Amelia and I have a lot of thoughts and a lot to say about something like this. But at the end of the day, like where I'm going to leave it at is, you know, this is an example of fetishization of Asian women, and that's racist in itself. And fetishization is just another form of objectification, and this is also misogynistic. And I know that Amelia has shared in her link tree some resources, and I'm going to add the same ones to our link tree in our bio, so check those out. So I had a couple of things in mind that I wanted to talk about today that you guys have, you know, requested from me. So I did an Ask Me Anything little thing on Instagram, and I literally meant anything, like ask me for advice, ask me personal questions, because I have given up any sense of privacy that I will ever have again. But we can start with some easy questions. So someone asked how I met my boyfriend, and I won't lie. Like, I feel like when I talk about my boyfriend, it's just like, because I feel this way sometimes when other people talk about their partner. But your eyes kind of glaze over, but I'll like get through pretty quickly. Pretty much we met on Hinge. I messaged him actually. I was like going through profiles and I thought he was cute, and then he had a picture of him dressed as Wednesday Addams, and that's like one of my go-to costumes because I've been told I look like Christina Ricci since I was a literal child, and I was like, you mean the Wednesday Addams girl? Great. And now I think it's rad, but he was dressed as Wednesday Addams, and he's like a foot taller than me, so I also have I had a picture of me dressed as Wednesday Addams, so I was like, okay, if you're going to be Wednesday, can I be Lurch? And then he did not reply, which is a fire pickup line, in my opinion. He didn't reply. And this was in my phase of like, I don't want a boyfriend. I'm not looking for a relationship. I don't even really know what I'm looking for. And then something in me was just like, this guy is so cute and he's not going to ignore me. So I messaged him again, and I was like, this was probably 3 days later, and I was like, I think you're cute, and I'm not trying to, like, date seriously, so if that's okay with you and you're interested in that, here's my phone number. And then he followed up with me pretty quickly, and the rest is history. So that's how we met. And then I got another question, like, tips for work-life balance. And this is something that when I saw this question, I was like, I'm struggling with this myself right now. Like, I'm usually pretty good with my work-life balance, just because in the past I haven't been, and it took a serious toll on my, like, emotional stability. I felt like a firecracker. Like, I could have just gone off at any second. And I don't know about some of you, but the way that, like, my anxiety shows up is I get really irritable and spicy and not in a fun way. And I don't want to be spicy if it's not fun. So getting that under control is the thing that was most helpful for me and, like, the biggest change I've seen in myself. But lately, you know, work's unpredictable sometimes. Sometimes you're going to be really busy, and that's where I'm at right now. But I liked this question because it reminded me that I need to keep myself grounded too. But it's easy for me to preach this, and all I can do is encourage you guys to do the same thing. But I'm really protective of my time. Like, I want my time to be respected when I'm at work. So sure, like, if I'm, like, dicking around and I need to work late on something, I know that's a result of my own consequence, or like a consequence of my own actions, because I was scrolling through TikTok for 45 minutes. So I, outside of those scenarios, I will only work my designated 8 hours a day. Like, I'm only going to work 9 to 5. Props to people who want to work all fucking day, but I don't want to do that. But I think the thing is being strict and not a pushover about my time. So work-life balance to me also goes outside of, like, extracurriculars. Like, I love this podcast so much, but it does require dedication and concentration. It's definitely not work, but, like, my Liz time to me is, like, sleeping and reading and watching TV. So that is something I would consider, like, life balance, like, life time. And it could also include things like cleaning and stuff like that. So I just make sure I check in with myself before I say yes to something, and it could be anything at all. Like, just if it's hanging out with my boyfriend, like, of course I love him and I love spending time with him, but, both of us are pretty independent people. So, like, we're really respectful of the fact that, like, sometimes you need some alone time. Sometimes you need some time to yourself to be a blob on your couch. Or clean up around the house and do some laundry. Like, it's so much easier to be like, yeah, I want to hang out with my boyfriend because that sounds so much more fun than doing chores or work. But then you feel anxious because you put off all of these other things that make you feel good, like when your house is clean or when your fridge is full. So just checking in with yourself is a huge part of balance for me too, is because like if you aren't giving to yourself first, and I mean giving to yourself like, do you feel safe and happy in your regular environment? Because if not, you need to focus on you. And once that section of your life is fulfilled, you're going to be able to enjoy everything else. And I've been trying to focus on mindfulness a lot lately, like living in the moment. And I know that sounds like YOLO-y or something like that, or like Pura Vida. But that's not how I mean it. I mean living in the present, like being able to be in the moment that you're in and appreciate everything that is happening around you. And like if you're having a good day, to take a second and think about each thing that is making your day good. And even if it's not like, you know, something big happened that made your day good, it could be something as simple as like, I'm really enjoying this cup of coffee while the sun beams in my window. Like that's something pretty simple that we take for granted regularly because it's just like a regular event. There's nothing big or dramatic or romantic about it. And I think that we shouldn't be ashamed to romanticize little everyday things. Oh, so Excuse the Intermission hit us up with a question, and they asked, worst/most boring movie you watched on a date? And I actually have a really good answer for this. So in college, I went on a date with a guy, and he wouldn't stop fucking talking about Kings of Leon. Oh, and I was like, okay, I only knew that one song, Your Sex is on Fire. Which, like, who knows, maybe it's about STDs, we're unclear. But then later that night, we decided to make dinner together, and we went to the grocery store and bought some, like, organic fancy vegetables, because he was going through a vegetarian phase. And then we went back to his place and started making dinner, and while we were eating, we started watching. He's like, I want to show you this documentary on Kings of Leon. And he had already watched it like twice or something. So then I had to sit through this boring fucking documentary about Kings of Leon. Like, I can't even name another song besides Your Sex is on Fire. And I also can't even tell you anything about that fucking movie because I was not paying attention. All I could think about was how annoyed I was that I was trying to have like a romantic date with this guy and he's making me watch a documentary on the Kings of fucking Leon. So that is the worst and most boring movie I've watched on a date.
Hey, what's up? This is Tim Dowling, writer of the Average Citizen blog and co-host of the new Average Citizen podcast. What is Average Citizen? Well, it's you, me, and everyone in between. We're all feeling a little overwhelmed and anxious at the state of our country right now. So join me and my co-host Tom Creighton as we research, discuss, debate, and explore some bigger pictures about America's future and the world. We're all in this together. Find us on the Chatter Network and at avgcitizen.com.
And this one, they asked, I want to hear your opinion on sex with eyes open versus eyes closed. This is so interesting. I've literally never thought of this. Like, because usually I'm like too in the zone to pay attention to what my eyes are doing, if that makes sense. Oh my God, I guess I've never really thought this in depth about this question before. So like, I'm thinking about like, there gets to a point where my eyes are closed. Like if I'm about to orgasm, my eyes are closed. Like I'm on another planet. I am focusing on getting to, I guess the best I could think of, like the best comparison I could think of is it's like, when you are a woman trying to orgasm, you need to focus to get to the top. Like, nothing around you can distract you, because even just your thoughts, even your internal monologue is like, oh, this is amazing. Like, you're in the zone. Like, it feels really fucking great. And then you have a little intrusive thought that's like, oh, I need to make sure I do this tomorrow. You're like, no, fuck off. I can't think about that right now. I'm on a mission. And that's why, like, I close my eyes towards the end, because I'm like, I can't have additional stimulation. Zing. Pun intended. So I have my eyes closed. But, like, when I'm thinking about watching a guy have sex, like it's a very, like, hot experience, you know? Like, you want to be making eye contact. You want them to be in your ear. Like, I guess, like, I prefer if we're, like, making eye contact. And it doesn't have to be the entire time. Like, there's always going to be a point where you're not seeing their face. And I think ultimately it also comes down to, like, what do we each look like when we're climaxing? Because, like, sometimes your O face is, like, stupid looking. I don't know. Like, the focus face. I know we've talked about that. So, like, I'm self-conscious of what I look like, because I have no idea what I look like when I come, and I'm not about to record myself doing it. But, like, I think, I don't know. It just really depends. It would be really weird to have sex with someone whose eyes were closed the entire time, right? Like, and also, are you kissing the whole time? I don't know. I have a lot of questions, and I need to survey everyone. So, yeah, this listener asked us a great question. And if you guys have thoughts, please DM them to us, because I'm so curious what everyone thinks about that. I want to know if your eyes are open or closed during sex, and for how long, and if your partner's eyes are open or closed, and, like, what they do. Sex drive with long-term partners seems to be down during COVID for a lot of girls in my circle. I know this is true for me for a myriad of reasons, but I was shocked that the majority of my friends felt the same exact way for the last few months. Are people kind of bored right now? So this is so interesting, and I actually, before I started recording, I had my therapy appointment, and I had mentioned the question that I was going to answer, like, this question that I was going to answer to my therapist, and, like, I've talked to her about sex before, too, and just different things that I've experienced in my sex life, so she was like, well, what do you think, like, how are you going to answer this? And, like, for a second, when I read this question, I was like, oh, sometimes I forget that, like, sex is a thing I can do. And I know that sounds weird, because, like, this is a sex and dating podcast, and, like, I would consider myself a pretty sexual person, especially, like, in the earlier episodes, I was, like, really only looking for, a sex partner. And now that I'm in a relationship, like, it's not because I'm bored with my partner. Like, I'm the happiest I've ever been. And I think that might be a big part of it is, I kind of noticed, like, I think we all have experienced, like, a drop in, sex when we're in a relationship. And there are so many different reasons that could be. But my therapist also pointed out, she was like, I mean, you can't relate to this because, like, your relationship has only existed within COVID. And that was also a crazy thing to think about. I'm in a COVID relationship. But in my past long-term relationships, like, I've lost interest in sex because my emotional needs weren't being met. And now, I wouldn't say I'm not interested in sex. I would say it's more like we know each other so much better, and we're still continuing to get to know each other in different ways. And like the ways that we're intimate and vulnerable expand outside of just having sex. So like there are just more opportunities for us to feel connected and safe with each other that, and I like, it doesn't bother either of us. So, and it's not like neither of us are like, both of us are sexually satisfied. So, it's not a problem. I am also really curious what that means for people who are like living with their partners. Like, there could be so many different reasons that there is less interest in sex between partners. Like, my therapist and I have discussed before in the past that like women controlling sex is a way for them to have control in a relationship, because oftentimes like there are things that we don't feel like we're in control of. And I think that's also a result of like generational patriarchal bullshit that we were all raised with and to believe. And then we're like, hey, wait, why am I miserable because of this? So I know that sometimes that's how it can show up is in sex. And when you aren't emotionally fulfilled, if you say no to sex, that is control. That is the control that you get to have when it comes to intimacy in your relationship with your partner. They're not going to be emotionally intimate with you, so you're not going to be sexually intimate with them. And I saw that a lot in my past relationships. And I also was made to feel like because I was their partner, it was my job and expectation to have sex. And I know I'm not the only one who's felt that way. I think, you know, a lot of us raised in religious families were made to feel that way. Like, our body was never our own. So that might not be the circumstance in, like, a COVID environment. And it might not just be, like, oh, we're bored. It could also be, like, you see each other so much more now. And I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, it just is less exciting because we're all living the same. We're living in Groundhog Day, seriously. So I feel like a lack of excitement in our lives in general could be a pretty big reason, like, why sex is less interesting. So one last topic that I wanted to talk about was HPV, because I feel like not a lot of people know a lot about HPV. I saw something on Twitter, and I'm going to read the tweet to you guys. So, this tweet says, it's like a picture, a screenshot of an article, and it says, men who perform oral sex on women are, quote, more at risk of mouth and throat cancers. And then the tweet says, it's 2018 and men are still disregarding the carcinogenic risk of eating pussy because they don't want their haggard, used-up girlfriend to think they're misogynistic or whatever. And then the person who retweeted that screenshot said, if eating pussy kills me, I died a noble death, which is really funny. And then when I retweeted it, I said, do men know they can get the HPV vaccine? And I explored the conversation in that original tweet, and there's just like a lack of information and a lot of misinformation, which was surprising to me because the human papillomavirus is, I think, 9 out of 10 people get it. And everything I'm about to say is just based on my own research and also listening to the podcast, This Podcast Will Kill You. They recently did an episode on HPV, and it is super interesting, and I highly recommend listening to it if you're curious about HPV. So the human papillomavirus has been around for a very long time, and like even things like warts on your like feet and hands, plantar warts, those are HPV. So most people have experienced like HPV in some sense by age 8. So if you've gotten a plantar wart, you know, you have had HPV. And then the other types of HPV, like, that people are talking about in, like, a sexual connotation, there's low-risk HPV, which are genital warts. And then there's high-risk HPV, which is, like, it has no symptoms. And they're classified as low-risk versus high-risk because when you have low-risk HPV, it's... You have very low risk of getting cancer. But if you have high risk HPV, you have a much higher risk of getting cancer. And the thing about HPV is it goes away. Like, most of the time it goes away. And it has, like, it's what's called, like, a shedding period. And it, like, sheds pretty aggressively. So, like, if you've ever gotten, like, a plantar wart on your foot, like, those things fucking spread like wildfire. I was in dance in middle school and high school, and there was, like, a time where, like, a bunch of the dancers got plantar warts because someone was, like, who had them was, like, walking around with no shoes on, and then, like, everyone in the studio started to get them. And I had to get a shot in my foot, and it was the most painful experience I've ever had, like, right in the heel of my foot. Ugh. So if you have an option to get it frozen off, do that for sure. But anyways, I mostly want to focus on high-risk HPV. So the tweet that I responded to, this person said, "The risk is linked from infection with HPV, so don't eat somebody out with HPV for a start." And I mean, this is, like, a pretty ignorant statement because most of the time people don't know they have HPV. The reason that 9 out of 10% people get it is because you don't have to be having sex to get HPV. And most of the time there are absolutely no symptoms. And because there are no symptoms and because it's very likely that, like, I think something like, I don't know, 95% of people, like, clear HPV within the first 2 years with no risks, and they never know they had it. And that's, like, part of it. There's no symptoms, you clear it, and there's no test for men. There is no HPV test for men. And women can get tested for HPV during their pap smear, but also, like, most gynecologists won't test for HPV before age 30 because of the high likelihood that you will get rid of it within the next 2 years. So insurances also don't cover you most of the time before age 30 if you're getting tested for HPV. But also there's an alternative option to buy an at-home test for HPV. I think, like, what's it called? Like, Everly Well or something like that. Yeah, Everly Well has an at-home HPV test you can buy for, like, $50, which would be probably about the same if, it actually might even be a little less if you went to your gynecologist and got tested for HPV and your insurance didn't cover it. So if you are very curious and have had abnormal pap smears, like, it might be worth getting an HPV test. But that being said, it is cool that you can test yourself for it at home, and hopefully it becomes more affordable considering, like, how many fucking people get HPV and don't even know it. The even cooler thing is there is a vaccine for HPV. It covers 9 different kinds of HPV. It's called Gardasil 9, and it is largely marketed towards women. And when it first started being marketed, it was, like, marketed as, like, towards, you know, girls who are 12, like teenagers, like 12 to 18 or something. And it was like, they just didn't market it well as, like, it was, like, seen as, like, give this vaccine to your young girl so they can become sexually active sooner, essentially. But that's not what it is at all. Like, when you get the vaccine during that, like, at a younger age, it is more likely to be effective. And, the vaccine isn't to prevent, like, an STD. It's to prevent cervical cancer. So let's talk a little bit more about how HPV becomes cervical cancer. So when you listen to This Podcast Will Kill You, they explain more of the science behind HPV and how it's like a very smart virus, essentially. It embeds itself into your DNA, and that's how it changes the cells on your cervix. And they survive in like mucosal cells. So like, you know, think of like your mouth and genitals. I mean, the fact that they can like go undetected in your DNA, like undetected by, I'm just thinking of like cells and like little shields. And I know that's not correct, but that's why I work in marketing and I'm not a scientist. But yeah, your body like has a harder time clearing it because it is a smart virus and embeds itself into your DNA and replicates itself there. So it can take like 15 to 20 years to develop into cancer, which is a pretty long time. However, like this is the first vaccine that can prevent a cancer. We could eradicate this type of cancer if we wanted to. And HPV doesn't only cause cervical cancer. It's also responsible for a large percentage of penile cancers and anal cancers and throat cancers. So this isn't like a women's issue. Like this is an issue for everyone. And I think it's really fucking cool that there's a vaccine for this. Like the fact that there's a type of cancer that we could eradicate if, you know, we were smart. The two types of high-risk HPV that cause cancer are 16 and 18. And I know when I've, like, done research in the past, 18 and 45 are, like, lumped together. I don't really know what that's all about. But Gardasil 9 protects against both 16 and 18. Men can get the vaccine, too. And I think that's the biggest thing to drive home, like, all boys, like every single person should get the HPV vaccine. Just because women get cervical cancer doesn't mean men are exempt from getting cancer in some capacity. And it also doesn't mean that like this is a woman's issue. It's not just an issue for people with cervixes. This is an issue for everybody. Okay, so let's say like you are tested and you do test positive for high-risk HPV. So what the next steps would look like, they'll tell you what type of HPV you have, because not all of the time your pap smear is abnormal doesn't mean you have HPV. So I'm sure when they do that, they're also testing for it, and they'll know what kind you have. And then after that, they'll request you go in again to get, it's called a colposcopy, and it's pretty much a biopsy of your cervix. So they put like a liquid on your cervix and it lights up like where your abnormal cells are on your cervix. And then they will scrape a sample off to see like how intense it is. And then like a few weeks later, they'll let you know what the results are. And there's different levels. And there's like level 1, level 2, level 3. And level 4 is pre-cancer. And then after that is cervical cancer. So level 1, they'll do like a wait and see type of thing. They'll just be like, because they don't know how long you've been carrying it, you know. You could have had it for 3 months and it's likely it'll just go away. So they'll do level 1, like wait and see. And then I think they do that with level 2 also, but level 3 and level 4, they're going to urge you to, you know, take some proactive steps towards preventing cervical cancer, which typically they're going to tell you to do a LEAP procedure, which is like what it is basically like an electrical loop that they use to like burn off the abnormal cells. And there's not a lot of information about a LEAP procedure. Like there's not a lot of information about treatments and the sexual side effects. So I remember Googling a LEAP procedure when I was like looking this stuff up, and an article came up that like women have lost their ability to orgasm because of a LEAP procedure. And it is really upsetting to me that sexual side effects aren't discussed when talking about these types of procedures, because like we all know that if this was happening to men, it would become a huge deal. They would be finding something else. Like the fact that insurance covers Viagra and Cialis, like it blows my mind that like, I don't know, women's health is so fucked up for a slew of reasons. And I'll go on that tangent in a couple minutes. But I would say investigate other options before getting a LEAP. I know there's also like cryotherapy. You know, you could go in for a couple sessions where they'll freeze it off, and that might be safer. I don't know. And then there's also a cone biopsy, which I think is like pretty hardcore and old school, where they like use a knife. And the reasons that like women's health are so fucked up, so when I was listening to this podcast, Will Kill You, I learned that like gynecology only started as a way to like to treat STDs in sex workers because of the infections their male clients were getting. So gynecology is like a branch of men's health, which is appalling and explains so fucking much. Like it explains so much about how awful like things like a speculum are, and just how archaic like our bodies are treated during these different like routines. And so many of them are ancient and have not changed. And that's why, it's because no one ever really gave a fuck about women's health. So that's my HPV rant. And I hope that it like equipped you guys with some more information about HPV. And you don't feel afraid of it. And also you don't, like, you're not ill-informed and encouraging the men in your lives to get Gardasil 9. We could even say, I'm also going to classify my little gynecology fact as the sex fact of the week, because I think that that's worth knowing how gynecology even got started. But thank you for joining me. And if you stuck around this long, I appreciate you so much. And now you know, I honestly, like, my internal monologue is so much better put together than how I sound when I'm talking out loud. Like, it's like, in my head, I sound like a philosopher. And then when I start talking out loud, I'm like, you know how, like, eyes close when sex? Talk about it. That's how I sound out loud. Anyways, I love you. It's not the same singing this without Amelia. Join us next week.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.